What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to Sensarena.com to check it all out.
On the Hockey IQ podcast today, we've got Jeremy. Help me with your last name, Blumes. Blumes. Wow, totally butchered that. Off to a great start. So I'm going to have to take myself away from hosting duties, clearly. So, Jeremy, you're in charge. We're going to fly, take the conversation wherever. I've already been talking offline about this, that, and the other. So let's have a good conversation. Sure. You're the man. You got this.
Well, thanks for having me, Greg. For those that aren't familiar, I'm Jeremy Blumes. I'm the head coach, GM, the Ontario Junior Reign in the USPHL, Ontario, Southern California. We're off to a good start. We're 19-5-1 and just about to break for the Christmas break after our showcase in Vegas in a couple weeks here. I saw Greg advertised that he was looking for somebody to host his show and wanted to be asked some questions. So I volunteered myself. And the first question I have off the bat is, we went into a three-game series with the other top team in our division, and we lost in a shootout. And man, did that sting. And I wanted to ask you, Greg, as far as a shootout goes in terms of preparation, that there are a few things that I was wondering after. Number one, as a home team, do you want to shoot first or second? How much pre-scout information would you provide your players on the goaltending, and how do you practice with intentionality for your players? So you know, I've been talking to my guys about change of pace and our approach and deke versus shot, but wanted to get your thoughts. So, the first part of the question is, we're the home team. Do we want to shoot first or second? What do you think?
I'm a fan of putting the pressure on the other guy. I'm like, I like shooting first. Nothing like scoring, and like if you score or don't score, either way, like, there's less pressure. So for me, if I'm shooting, I want to go first. Like, I don't like being second in the deck. Like, oh, I have to score. I can miss. I don't know. Just irks me the wrong way. Like, be assertive, take control of the situation. We're going first. That's my two cents on it. I just love being first. Like, even in baseball, I'm like, I want to be the leadoff hitter. So maybe it's just a personality quirk at this point.
So playing devil's advocate, if we elect to shoot first and miss, and then their shooter goes down and scores, does that same logic not apply that now the pressure is on us? I mean, maybe it's six and a half of six and six of the other, however that saying goes.
You're going to be down either way. If you would have went second and they score, right, and you missed, I mean, you still got the pressure regardless. So just score, baby. Just score.
Yeah. Okay, so going into the next one, we want to shoot first. That's what you're telling me?
I'm doing that all day with my teams. I always want it first. Okay. Adult league, high school, youth, okay, always. We're going first. We're taking the initiative. We're applying the pressure. You know, we're never going to absorb and like feel out the game. Like, we're just going to go and take it. Same thing in the shootout.
Okay. How much pre-scout information would you provide your shooters?
I always provide information, whether it be a shootout or just regular game, just on the goalies themselves. Like, huge difference if you're playing a goalie who loves the challenge. Like, Oh my gosh. Okay. The feet are going to be usually an absolute mess. They're going to let out rebounds like crazy, and just like side of the net is going to be the best place to hang out because they're going to be going there all day. Now you take that to a shootout, like they're probably going to challenge a lot. So maybe we want to throw a fake shot, see if we can get them to go down on the butterfly. And then you're able to, yeah, you're able to go right around them, that kind of stuff. So for me, I'm looking at how aggressive, how much kind of depth is a goalie playing? How far out are they? Are they on their top of their crease? Do they go even further beyond that? Do they love to like push off the post hard out? Whatever that may be, just to understand what you're going against. And then for me, I'm always looking like, is there a favorite hand? Like, do you love the glove hand? And then you just totally forget about your blocker, because there's a ton of youth goalies that is the case. A lot, you know, as you go up the levels, that becomes less and less of the case. But especially high school youth, like ton of goalies, they're like glove all day, super strong. They're going to lean into it, love it. And then the blocker is just an afterthought. And then you've got other goalies where their glove is, you know, the black hole of the earth, like anything's going in.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big believer that if you're a left-hand shot and you come down the right side of the ice and you want to go low blocker, and if you're a right-hand shot, you want to go down the left side of the ice and get to the middle of the ice so you have as much net to shoot at as possible.
I would say like the next piece, right? Okay. So like you're looking at depth. Like if a goalie comes out, usually it's a good opportunity to deke, right? Cause there's going to be space behind them. They're cutting down the angle. Goalie plays it deeper. Now you've got more chance of a shot. And if you deke, you know, you're going to have to get it up. You can't keep it on the ice. So just makes it a little bit harder. So like for me, I'm always looking at depth. I think that's the first piece when I'm like leaning, sure, am I going to go this or that? Then the next piece after that for me is like, all right, how do we disrupt their feet? Because everything's about footwork when you know, look at it, like the ground contact for how fast you can skate, where you can skate, how you can get into your edges, you know, everything is based on footwork. So we got to disrupt the feet. So for me, not skating at the goalie is huge. Like you skate directly at a goalie, that's pretty easy for them. Maybe they throw a little bit of backflow that, you know, that pace they're going backwards at. But like, if you can disrupt their feet, that's the best thing. So like, I'm a huge fan, and you see a ton of NHLers these days. They're like, they'll go out, almost like touch the boards on the hash marks and like then come in. My one issue though, is a lot of guys will go out wide. They come in and then like when they get in line with the dots, then they go straight at the goalie again. Like what was the point of the early part? Like all this jazz, but the real deal comes like circles, you know, dots and below. You know, you get the hash and below, like we're still should not be going at the goalie. Like there's a Twitter thread I did on like the Leafs. I'm like, they scored twice. All of the shots that did not skate at the goalie, they scored on. All of the shots that they skated at the goalie, they missed. I'm like, maybe there's a correlation. We should be looking into this. Like, how do you disrupt the foot? Like Matthews did the go to the right, cut to the middle, and then he made the deke. And then through that, he just put a little backhand right five hole. Like the goalie was still fumbling over his footwork. Makes it really hard. And then the other one was a shot. The guy was literally like skating into the far corner and just shot back the opposite direction as the goalie went one too little much on the shuffles. So for me, it's about like, how do you disrupt the angle of the feet and allow yourself a good chance there? You know, there's a few ways you can dress it up with the deke, with the shot, et cetera. And just messing with the angles and feet, it's just massive. So the route into the shootout or into the goalie there, I think is massive. So those are like the two big things for me. You know, making
what about,
sure.
What about speed? What about speed? Change of pace.
I think speed can be good, especially if an aggressive like comes way out and then comes back really fast.
The goalie or the shooter?
The goalie's coming out like to the low hash marks and they're coming back with a ton of speed, and you're because they're going to end up crashing the net if you hit the brakes a little bit. So I like to come with a little bit of speed. There's less to it than you're talking about with like a breakaway, because it's just a cat and mouse game at this point, right? So like the goalie's going to naturally try to change the speeds, and right, they can kind of do that in the shootout. I think starting with speed and then slowing up is usually just a good little thing to do. So if you like pick up speed super early and then kind of hit the brakes, maybe tops the circle area that can be effective. I would say it's almost secondary, because usually that's going to be, if you're going straight at the goalie, right, they're going to try to match that as best they can. And then the rest, if you're going, say, side to side, and you're looking at like corners, not skating at the goalie per se, then it's going to be more about how do they shuffle and make those micro adjustments. And many goalies are not very good at the micro adjustments like you see at an NHL level.
So let's flip it. And instead of talking about how do we score for the goalies, what sort of information are you giving them in terms of pre-scout and what kind of coaching are you providing them in a shootout situation?
Preferences. Did player want to shoot? Do they want to deke? Like, there's then also.
What if you're in an environment where you're seeing this team, like you coach high school hockey. So what, you know, my guess is you don't see, St. Mary's or School X more than once a season. So what kind of information are you giving your goalie at that time?
I go with the old Mitch Korn. So if you just go Mitch Korn, KORN, how to play the breakaway, like that'll give you a ton of information. Like, for example, 70% of dekes go to the backhand. So you can kind of start making some hunches of like what's going to happen in general. If they're going to shoot, you know, they're probably going to go short side. If it's a righty, they're probably going glove high. If it's a lefty, you're looking at low blocker. Those kinds of things where you're just seeing the patterns that emerge, you know, places players like to go to. Just give yourself the odds. Like, you know, it's like going on a 2-on-1. Like a 2-on-1, you know, there's probably about not quite a third, a little bit under that, but like 25% chance the other team's going to score no matter what you do. So it's like, how do you just stack the odds in your favor a little bit? You know, maybe take away the pass is a good option, for example. Like, if your team takes away the pass, you're probably only going to give it up, say 20% instead of, you know, 30%. If you allow that pass, I think I got to look these numbers up. It's been a while. I think if you let that pass on a 2-on-1 go through, it's like a 30 to 40% chance of going in.
Across the Royal Road?
Yeah, Royal Road pass on a 2-on-1. If that pass goes across, especially below the tops of the circles, like it's
high. Yeah. I asked a couple buddies of mine how often, you know, in practice, we'll do 2-on-1s, 3-on-2s a bunch, right? So I asked a couple coaching buddies of mine, Tyler Drader, who coaches the State Trojans, and Alex Even, who coaches the Prince George Spruce Kings. And I said to them, what do you guys think the percentage should be? And they both agreed that 2-on-1s should be higher, so closer to 15 to maybe 20, and a 3-on-2 right around 10 or 15%. Maybe you're more efficient at coaching those odd man rushes and guys cashing in more. But I mean, that's what those two guys said. And then I started tracking it in practice. Odd man rushes, how often are we burying? And, you know, sadly it's right around that 10-15% mark, which, I mean, maybe that's a credit to our D in goaltending, but odd man rushes, it's interesting. I asked a couple guys that know what they're talking about, and that was the numbers that they came out with.
When I got some numbers for you too here. I just looked them up.
Okay.
So from Stathletes, 2-on-0 scores 35% of the time, breakaway 25%, 3-on-1 24%, 2-on-1 22%, 4-on-2 15%, 3-on-2 10%, 4-on-3 7%.
This is, and, sorry, what is that? Strathletes?
Stathletes.
Okay. What is that?
So if you just go 2-on-1 rushes, hockey IQ, you'll find these things. This is on the Hockey IQ newsletter. And then I got some other stuff from other research. So this was Ottawa.
That's at the NHL level then?
Yes, NHL level.
Okay.
So your level might be lower, just the execution probably is not both of our levels are probably a little bit.
I think that's fair to say. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is from, I always butcher his last name. I'm just going to go Nick Schulman. He's got a hyphenated, but Ottawa Hockey Analytics Conference.
Hmm.
So if a pass was completed and a shot on net, those went in 27% of the time. If it was just a shot, it was 15.5%. Two-on-ones have the third highest shooting percentage after breakaways and three-on-ones. NHL level, 65% of the time a pass is attempted. Pass off of pads, you know, some coaches absolutely love that. They lead to rebounds, but those are only cashed in about 7% of the time. So quite terrible.
When you say pass off the, you said that with like a little bit of disdain in your voice. What are your thoughts on a pass off pad?
There are moments where it is a good play. I did it probably 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago in adult league. So it is good. We did cash in on that. That being said, I probably hadn't done that in like a year's time. Like there are very specific situations where that is the play. Like it's a 2-on-2 almost, like the back checker. Like you can't get it there. Your shot isn't going to, you got a bad opportunity to shot. You also got a bad opportunity making the pass, but you're like, I think I can get it to him.
You need F2 driving the net, and you want to be on a bad enough angle that you are going to fire a waster versus trying to score.
Yeah, I find it usually the F2 is not driving hard to the net. They're kind of in like that middling circle, like the far dot area.
Yeah, especially like, if it's barely.
It allows them the time to react. Because usually people like the dumbest thing also on the POP is a lot of players will just rip it super hard. And with that one, it needs to be about half speed. You know, if you're ripping, you know, shots at like 80 miles an hour, like an NHL or like, you know, make it 40 miles an hour. Like that would be the right speed. You take it off. You got to get usually a little bit off the ice, especially a goalie with a good active sticks. It's like a really hard skill to actually pull off too.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, all of these things come into play and I'm like, I'm not even going to mention it to my players. I'm like, I would rather you at this point stop up. Let's get some offensive zone time. Maybe once in a blue moon, we should actually utilize it. But if we're going to do something different, like more often than not, I want the offensive zone possession time, like force the other team to actually defend, force them to get tired. Like most players hate playing defense anyway, especially wingers. They go to sleep. And eventually, if you hold on to it long enough, you'll have a great opportunity. So, I'm not a big POP kind of guy, but it has its moments like everything else in life.
Okay. So last question on the penalty shot or break or penalty shot. How would you structure practice around your goalies performing well in those situations? And then the flip side of that obviously is how do you structure practice so that guys are gonna bury when they do have penalty shot opportunities or shootout opportunities?
You know, put something on the line. I love to break them into two teams. If your guy scores, the other team does a hard lap. And then the opposite, if they don't score, it's your team that's skating. So like, you know, there's a little bit of pressure. I think pressure is a key component. Like in a game, you're going to feel a little bit of pressure, you know, like, I really don't want to skate here. I better bury, you know, I really want them to. And then the goalies are super excited when they get a stop, like, you know, or like if they got one of the teammates, it's like really talking and chirping really hard. Like, don't care if that team scores, but I really want to stop this team because this guy's being that guy to me. Yeah. So I think that's a lot of fun. That's one way to spruce it up. And then I'll do random challenges where like, I'll just tell the players, I'm like, all right, everything needs to go five hole. Like whatever you do, try five hole, find new ways to mix it up. Don't tell the goalie because otherwise that kind of ruins it. Like they're just going to try to stop five hole. They'll pick up on it. Like they're not stupid. You know, humans are, you know, they've got brains. But for those first like 10, 15 shots, we're like, everyone keeps going five hole today. Like, I don't know what's up with that. So I think that's fun. Another one I've done is like, you have to score on the ice. You know, a lot of times it leads to five hole, but like sometimes it's like a change of speed where you come in fast, slow up, and then you make that like dart to the far post, or like you try to do the Patty Kane, like do fake over here and then go. That's also fun. And so just having some, those are just two ideas of, you know, five hole on the ice, you know, finding ways that, how can they move the goalie is kind of where my mind goes with it. And how can they read depth? Like, those are the two things, you know, like if your guy starts here, we're only shooting. If he starts here, we're only deacon, you know, things like that, where, you know, you can play around with it a little bit, but I would say majority of this is good for off ice, where we're talking like, okay, what's a good approach route? Like, do we actually want to skate? You know, so like, you don't want to skate at a goalie very often. Like, even when you're in a regular game, like, how many times a defenseman get a puck at a point and they just go directly at the goalie? Like, what if you just skated like down the dot line? Like, goalie's feet are probably going to be moving. So, one, if there's traffic, good chance you can shoot around them and get a clean shot. Or at worst, like, rebounds on goalies that have their feet set usually are terrible. They end up in the corner or up in the netting. You know, they usually get a stick on it or something. But if they're in, like, even just a little bit of movement, or they're like just finishing a movement or just starting a movement, like, oh, those rebounds are really juicy. Mm-hmm. So finding ways where we're not skating at a goalie. So, you know, the down routes, diagonal, across, whatever they are, just not directly at a goalie. Okay. I actually had a defenseman I'm working with. He plays out in the BCHL. And that was one of the things. I'm like, just stop skating at the goalie. And he's like, yeah, I had two assists on rebounds that were just juicy right to my teammates. Normally just skate it and ends up in the glove or up in the. So I've tried it out. I've had people try it in adult league, junior leagues. You know, it works.
Okay. Moving on. Second part here is on the PK. What triggers or what terminology do you use with your PK unit in order for them to identify opportunities to jump and on loose pucks and get pucks down?
I mean, I think you just said it. I mean, loose pucks, I mean, those are the best ones, the pressure, right? We don't have full control. For me, it starts with, like, if you could just disrupt them ever getting set up in general, like, can we just pressure them before they even get to the point where they're comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got to be careful on that, because if you actually watch anything that's not the NHL or professional hockey, like, majority of power play goals are not on set plays. Like, the NHL just makes it look so pretty and they're so scripted and everyone knows what they're doing. They're all have this great amount of cohesion. Mm-hmm. But anything lower, majority of them are, you know, it was a broken play where, like, a guy tried to clear it and now, you know, we've got a 3-on-2 at the net. So I would say that if you can just not let them ever get set up, most teams really struggle with that. I love clogging up the neutral zone. Like, how can we challenge the red line? How can we challenge the blue line? You know, it's in the rule book. Like, how can we make the most of our rule book that we have? Like, this is a game. How can we lean it into our favor? Once you're in the zone, backs and bobbles are like the classics for me. You know, like, is a player showing you their back? Like, they can't see squat. Like, they're probably going to throw a weak rim puck, probably low. And we're going to be able to get a good jump there and pressure, right? They've got to work out of that. That's tough.
Is there anything with body position or stick position or, that would help players read, bobbles or backs? Like, is there something before you see the back that you can anticipate, I am going to see his back, and that's going to help me trigger faster?
And usually you're going to see someone's back off a rim or like a puck that's not very calm and it jumps over their stick, or they got to like smack it down. So, I mean, it's almost self-explanatory. Like, I know a ton of coaches that their D pinch on any rim. If there's a rimmed puck, they're deer pinching. It is nonstop, no matter what. F3 better fill and help out a little bit or be tracking back. So same thing here on a PK, like a rim's probably going to be a back. Now, like Nikita Kucherov, like, he'll go on and pay a skills guy like $600 an hour or something like that, and then for an hour just work on picking up rimmed pucks, because he realizes like that's a very vulnerable spot. And if you can do it well, it's a huge advantage. Mm-hmm. But, you know, re-engineer this for the lower levels. Like, rims are not easy to pick up. Even on your forehand, you're probably like at least shoulder, like, you're not seeing full ice. Like, you're just seeing forehand side.
Mm-hmm.
Backhand, like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know how many players, even at the NCAA D1 level, like, backhand rim pickups, not good. Good at all. So any kind of rim puck, that's usually going to bring a back automatically. Sometimes we bring a bobble. So rims, backs, bobbles, those are the main three. And then it's just making sure that we're all pressing to the next player. Some teams are ready for that. Some teams are not. Some just like just pressure back in a bobble. And if we get it, you know, read and react. If you got a more advanced team that can think the game, like everyone presses to the next puck carrier, like make them have to make that cross ice saucer pass, make them have to do a rim release, which very rarely do you see a team outside of, you know, major junior type hockey actually be able to accomplish that. Mm-hmm. So if we can just press to the next guy, press to the nearest puck carrier, suffocate those passing options, we're going to have a ton of success. And the last thing I'm going to add on this is like, it kills me when players just throw pucks out just to try to like hope they get out. For me, you are icing it if you know you can get it out. If you do not feel that is the case, make a pass, skate it out of pressure, eat a puck. Do not like this leads into that like majority of power play goals or broken plays. Usually it's off of, for at least what I see out there, off of someone like hoping, like I'm just going to try to hope this gets cleared out, and it doesn't. And here we are scrambling and boom, it's in the back of our net rather than this, the beautiful set play that the other coach drew up.
Yeah. Okay. Last question here. How much information is too much information before a game?
For me, I think in sets of threes, like if you go over more than three things, I'm like, I can't remember that. That's why I love your questions. You know, you're like one, two, and three. Keep it simple, short, amazing. I'm like, all right, perfect. I can remember these three things. We're good. So for me, for ever, I'm like, if I give any more than like two, I'm not feeling very happy about it. So I try to limit everything to two. If I go to three, I'm like, no big deal. It's still three. It's like nothing. Anything more than that, terrible. Yeah. So usually I've got, maybe one or two things specifically for my goalie, like, where do they like to shoot from on the power play is usually a good thing for the goalies, just so they know what to expect. Cause a lot of teams will just post up a guy in front. So they're like, okay, well, kind of need to have an idea of like, if they're going to shoot here, maybe I need to be ready to go into a butterfly in a good blocking position. So I'll give goalie some information on that. Or if there's like a guy who's really got some heat they can bring, if they like, you know, if they have preference on where they like to shoot, but usually goalies, those are the two big that I do. Defensemen, if there's anyone you need to watch in particular, like this player is very dangerous, need to be aware when they're out there, or a player who goes back to the exact same tactic over and over again and really doesn't have a B or C game. There's a ton of players, like their coaches have clearly told them they need to drive wide with speed. They had success once or twice and they don't know any other tactic now. Probably need to be aware that you're going to need to be able to pivot, and you know it's okay to maybe pivot a little bit earlier. To make sure that you can get that speed. That's I think super important. Just like knowing your wingers, like so many defensemen have no idea, even in the third period, like who the hell they're going against. Like you're gonna, like if you're a right defenseman, you're gonna see their left wingers all game long. Like you should be able to start picking up on their tendencies, what they like to do. Like, so I like to challenge my players on that of like, okay, here's what I've noticed. You guys tell me what you're starting to notice as we go along. Like I'll check in with you between periods.
As far as pre-scout goes for us at the start of the week, we'll do, and this is why I asked this question. Cause I'm always wondering like, am I giving them too much information? I'm not giving them enough. So at the start of the week, we'll do video on the opposition. We keep it to 3-4 minutes and it's the opposition's forecheck, their D zone and their special teams. And then a little bit of their key guys. So that's the video. And then the next day we have a pre-scout of, you know, what we're going to do. So what our forecheck is, what our D zone is. And then, you know, usually we'll pick a theme like, what was last week's theme? Last week's theme was desire, just in terms of wanting it more than the opposition and winning races and being hard to play against and that sort of thing. But when it's a week buildup, you know, I feel like giving them that information over the course of the week helps prepare them. But then, and again, it's why I'm asking the question, like how much is too much? Cause you don't want guys thinking out there. You want them, you know, trusting their instincts, right?
Well, you want them recognizing, like everyone says, you don't want your players thinking, but they definitely need to be recognizing. So like the brain needs to be in operational mode.
Yeah.
But I think you have like the good feel there. Like so many coaches will go over like, here's what the other team does. And they just end there. Okay. Right. What are we as a team going to do about it? And then how can we build cohesion as a unit? Like we all know we're going to do this on this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, backs and bobbles, all my players know we're pressuring on the PK. Go to your next man. You know, just like you can build those in through the season, pre-game pack or preseason packets, whatever it may be. And then there's, you know, opposition stuff. Like teams that go five back, like make them push you back on the PK. Like, why are we standing so far back? Like, no, don't do that. So, you know, every team has their shtick. You know, they love to break out through the middle, for example. Like, there's teams out there. I mean, you've seen plenty of that. So for me, it's just like having a game plan and then we're all in awareness of that.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I love to do, and you may do this as well, is like, I'll be like, okay, here's the play, the face-off plays we're doing. And then the following week, I'm going to pick a rookie to draw up on the board what I put down. Like they're the ones teaching.
Yeah.
So
ownership.
Yeah, exactly. We're trying to build ownership, not just like, because too many coaches are like, oh, I taught it. Well, that's great, but there needs to be a learning piece to this. Yeah. And how often do us as coaches, do we confirm the learning?
Yeah.
You know, like we just stop and or like someone's like, blah, blah, blah. Any questions? I asked if they had any questions. I don't know what happened here. Like, that's a terrible question, right? When we're checking for understanding, you know, any questions or my personal favorite, does that make sense? No, coach, it doesn't make sense. Help me out. Like, has any coach ever gotten that other than like once or twice from that one kid who's just maybe a little too inquisitive?
Mm.
Like, I don't know. For me, it's like, I'm always trying to figure out, okay, what did they actually capture? And if they didn't capture anything, I clearly need to do something different. I need to be the one that changes, you know, like they're humans. I need to at least have the mindset, whether or not it may or may not be me. Like I need to have the mindset that it is me always.
Yeah.
I have like, you definitely have to see this. Like how many coaches are like afraid to actually coach? Like, I did this. I covered this. Well, that's great, but okay. They don't get it. Mm-hmm. So you need to be better next time, or you need to figure out another way to go about this. Like stop running away from coaching, like lean into it. Like our team sucks at this. I covered it last week. Figure out something different, a different way to cover it. Right. You know, have them teach you, have them come up with their own drill for Christ's sakes. Like that's perfectly okay. Mm-hmm. I personally, one of the things I love to do is what I call a coffee game. Like there's a game I'm just going to pick out in the schedule at random and basically like, yeah, you guys run it. Pick the lines, do the line changes, everything. I'm here to make sure we don't do anything stupid, provide pucks, water bottles. But the rest of it, you guys have. And often there's the inevitable too many men on the ice or too few guys on the ice.
Right.
You know, so there's that. And then, you know, they gain a little respect for, okay, maybe coaching, you know, there's a little something into this. And then, you know, they understand a little bit more of the ownership. And I do a ton of tricks on like ownership stuff. Like there are times where I'm like, yeah, you guys got it. I'm not doing a whistle. Make eye contact. Make sure the lane's clear.
Talk it out.
Yeah, like I like giving bad passes in practice, you know, like, oh, we need a new puck in a drill. Like, I'm not giving you a good puck. Like, you're going to start with garbage because that's what it's like in a game. Or like, other times just like making sure that I'm out of the way. Like, there's a little bit of friction. Like, I'm explaining it, not on the board. I'm explaining in concept and I want you guys to do it. It's even better when you got some returners who kind of know what they're doing or like they're kind of fuzzy on it. So they're figuring it out. Now they're talking to each other and like, well, what am I supposed to do? Where are you supposed to go? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And just kind of like have that friction where it looks like oh, coach did a terrible job of explaining a drill. And it's like, maybe I kind of did that on purpose. Maybe I want a little vague description where now you guys actually have to talk to each other. Cause as we all know, people and players, especially young kids coming through puberty and entering adulthood, they don't always communicate that well.
All right, Greg. Well, that's our time. Appreciate you answering my questions. It certainly helps and gives me some food for thought going into the next couple weeks here. And it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's great. So everyone, you know, if you're got a high school team, make sure to send your best player to Jeremy over there. I hear Southern Ontario, not Southern Ontario, Southern California has some decent weather. So not a bad place to be.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thanks, Greg.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch your Buttes here next week for a brand new episode.